Morning. It's good to see everyone out. I've said a lot that we can do a lot of things here in the building, but until I start seeing people that I haven't seen in a long time, none of that really mattered to me. So it is such a blessing, so wonderful to see so many of you all that we haven't seen in so long coming back, and it's so wonderful to see you all. I have a tendency a lot of times to just worry about what's going on with me. But it sort of gives me chills when I think about how relevant that today's text is to our current situation. We may feel like by looking around our world today and thinking about everything that's going on and has gone on with the virus and being separated, that we are in uncharted territory. But this really isn't. As far as the world is concerned, this isn't really uncharted territory. This is not the first time that a sickness has swept through the world and brought everything to a standstill. Thankfully, we didn't live in the worst time for this to happen. In fact, in today's text is about a disease, a plague, a pestilence that swept through Israel and killed 70,000 people in 3 days. I think it's incredibly relevant. It starts in 2 Samuel 24 where David is moved or incited to take a census to number the people of Israel. It's interesting that 1 Chronicles says that Satan incited David to take the census. And in 2 Samuel, it says it was the Lord who incited David to take the census. So, which is it? Well, as so often we did in the book of John, the answer is yes. It's both somehow. Neither text tells us how David was incited to take the census or what exactly caused him to take the census. Maybe it's like a situation like Job, where Satan is allowed to openly test someone, and God is allowing that to happen. One way or another, David is incited to take a census and number the people. And what we have to understand is that is a big deal. In fact, David sinned by taking the census. The law of Moses in Deuteronomy makes it clear that to take a census is not an inconsequential thing. In Exodus chapter 30, it says that the nation of Israel takes a census and numbers the people, then they have to make an atonement. An offering must be made on behalf of every single person. So we might stop and ask, why is taking a census such a big deal? At that time, when a nation numbered their people, as Will was saying, the primary reason was to number their fighting men. They wanted to know how strong is our military. The only reason, one reason you'd want to know how strong your military is because you want to go fight somebody. And the only time that Israel was supposed to fight somebody was if God told them to go and fight somebody. And if God told them to go and fight somebody, then it didn't matter how many people or how few people they had, because God told them to go and fight somebody, it would be God that gave them the victory. That's why all throughout the Old Testament, one fact that is made abundantly clear, it is not to trust in military strength, and to do so amounts to idolatry. In fact, in Psalms chapter 20, verse 7, probably even David who penned these words, "Some trust in chariots, and some trust in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God." Those who trust in chariots and horses, they collapse and fall, but we rise and stand upright. To trust in your own strength, to trust in the strength of a military, is not to trust God's power and strength. So before we get into our text, here's a thought I want us to think over. You can either trust in your own power and strength, or you can trust in God's power and strength, but you cannot do both. If you are trusting in your own strength, and that's exactly what David is doing, David wants to know the might of his military. How strong are we? How powerful are we? Who can we fight? Who can we take on? And when you're trusting in your own strength and power, you are not trusting in the Lord's. To trust in the Lord's strength is recognizing your own weaknesses. You can only trust the Lord when you acknowledge and you embrace your own weaknesses. You think about the Beatitudes. Jesus would say things like, blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor, blessed are those who are persecuted. Why are those people blessed? Because it's those people who recognize their own weakness and they rely on the Lord's strength. You can either trust your own strength and power or you can trust the Lord's strength and power, but you cannot do both. And so David wants to number the people of Israel. We'll look at 2 Samuel verse 3. Joab, you'll remember, is David's commanding officer. It says, but Joab said to the king, may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are now, while the eyes of my lord the king still see it. But why does the Lord the king delight in this thing? In other words, may God multiply the people 100 times over, and may you, David, live long enough to see it. But why are you insisting on doing this thing? But the king's word prevailed against Joab and the commanders of the army. So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. The census was taken. Joab and the commanders go out and they count the people and they figure out just how strong Israel is. But instead of David feeling strong, David realizes his sin. He realizes that he's focused on the wrong things, that he's trusting in all the wrong things, and he realizes he's fallen short. Verse 10 says, but David's heart struck him after he had numbered the people of Israel. And David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. By now, O Lord, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. And when David arose in the morning, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, go and say to David, thus says the Lord, 3 things I offer you. Choose one of them that I may do to you. David realizes a sin and how sorry he is. And God, or Gad, who's like a prophet, a seer to David, comes and says, okay, but you're going to have to deal with the consequences. You have 3 choices. 3 possibilities, and God is going to allow David to choose his own punishment. Verse 13, so Gad came to David and told him and said to him, shall 3 years of famine come into your land? Or will you flee for 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Or shall 3 days of pestilence, a disease, a plague in your land? Now consider and decide what answer I shall return to him who sent me. So 3 not so great choices. 1, a famine to last 3 years, 3 months of fleeing from his enemies, months of war in which his enemies would prevail, or 3 days of pestilence would sweep throughout Israel. It's interesting how David answers. David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Let us fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercy is great. But let me not fall into the hand of man. So the Lord sent a pestilence on Israel from the morning until the appointed time. And there died of the people from Dan to Beersheba 70,000 men. Now, David knew that the plague, that the disease, the pestilence was because of his sin. It was because of a specific sin. Now, even though we are living through a pestilence, there's no reason for us to think it's any one person or any one group of persons' fault that we are living in this. But it is the result of indirect sin. It is indirectly the result of sin. All of the problems, all of our disease and pain and death that we deal with in our life is the result because we live in a fallen world. When mankind, human beings, decided to sin and rebel against God, we chose to forfeit living in the garden, and now we live in a world of plague. Now we live in a world where sin and death are our constant reminder. And a constant reality. We have these moments in time where we become even more realized and even more at the forefront of our minds that we live in a world of sin and death and brokenness. And again, it's not any one person or any one group of people's fault. It's not God punishing us. It's because we live in a broken and fallen and death-riddled world. But here's one truth that David points out that still remains true. God's mercy is great. David says, given the choice between war and having to deal with people that might harm or kill us, given the choice between dealing with enemies and dealing with God, I choose God. Given the choice between disease and war, I choose disease. Because if I fall in the hands of man or fall in the hands of God, I would rather choose to fall in the hands of God. Why? Because God is merciful. And we might look at the situation and say 70,000 people died in Israel, but that is nothing compared to what people do. That's nothing compared to what people do to each other, and not just back then, but all throughout history. 40 million people died in World War I. 75 million people died in World War II. The things that we do to each other are more horrendous than anything a disease can do to us. More horrendous than what a plague does to us. More horrendous than what a pestilence does to us. Given the choice between war and pestilence, pestilence is a pretty good choice. Given the choice to fall into the hands of men or to fall into the hands of God, it's a good choice to fall into the hands of God. Again, why? Because God is merciful. And even if we continue to live in a world full of sin and death and disease and brokenness and horrendous things that happen in our world, we can still say God is still incredibly merciful to us. There is still so much good, so much life. God still holds back death. God still holds back disease. God still doesn't ravish us as probably humanity deserves. God holds back and refrains from punishment because God loves us and God is merciful. Verse 16 says, "And when the angel stretched out his hand toward Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord relented from the calamity and said to the angel who was working destruction among the people, 'It is enough. Now stay your hand.' And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing floor of Arona, the Jebusite." It is enough. And that's exactly what David knew God would do. That God refrained and God had mercy. And then David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking the people and said, "Behold, I have sinned and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Please let your hand be against me and against my father's house." And I want you to notice a couple of things that happened in this story. Number one, the disease, the pestilence they are dealing with was David's fault. It was David's sin. As their leader, as their king, he caused them to suffer. He caused them to be in pain. He caused 70,000 to die. Which, as you continue throughout the story through 2 Kings, as we've said for the last several weeks, this would continue to be the way of the kings of Israel and Judah. That's how they would behave. And because of their sin, the people would suffer. Just as our father Abraham brought sin into the world and caused pain and suffering for all of us because of the fall, David, the king, the shepherd of Israel, brought sin and death and pain to Israel. On the one hand, it was David's fault, and that would continue again to be the story for the kings, that would continue to bring sin and death and suffering into the people of Israel. But on the other hand, I want you to see the beautiful foreshadowing here of the gospel that you see. Do you see what David does? That David says, "Why should these sheep suffer?" And then he offers himself. He says, "Let the punishment fall on me. Let me take the punishment on behalf of the people." And again, David was the one at fault here, but on the other hand, he becomes and offers himself the one who would atone for, to take away the sin or step in between and take the punishment for the people so that the sheep could live. The shepherd would take their place. David becomes this picture of a king who would come not bringing sin and death and suffering to the people, but one who would say, "Why should these sheep suffer? Let the punishment fall on me." And Gad came that day to David and said to him, "Go up and raise an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Arauna the Jebusite." So David went up at Gad's word, as the Lord commanded. And when Arauna looked and saw the king and his servants coming towards him, Arauna went out and paid homage to the king with his face to the ground. And Arauna said, "Why has the Lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor from you, in order to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be averted from the people." David's going to go and buy this piece of land from this man to build an altar, so to stop the plague. And verse 22 says, "And Arauna said to David, 'Let the Lord the king take and offer up what seems good to him. Here are the oxen for burnt offering, and the threshing sledge, and the yokes of the oxen for the wood. All this, O king, Arauna gives to the king.' And Arauna said to the king, 'May the Lord your God accept you.'" This man that David is going to buy land from, and the place where he's going to build an altar, the man who owns it says, no, I don't want you to buy it from me. I want to give it to you. You're the king." And so he offers David everything he needs, the land, the bulls, the oxen, whatever David needs, Arauna is willing to give to him. But the king said to Arauna, "No, but I will buy it from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God that cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built an altar to the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And so the Lord responded to the plea for the land, and the plague was averted from Israel. The way the story goes, the king has to pay the price to lift the curse. That David wasn't willing for somebody else to pay the price to lift the curse. David himself had to be the one to pay the price to lift the curse. Our king offered something that didn't just cost him something, but offered something that cost him everything. Our king offered himself to lift the curse and to give life. David gives us this picture of one who says, "I'm not going to give an offering that doesn't cost me something." And Jesus comes, a descendant of David, who says, "I'm going to offer something that doesn't just cost me something, but cost me everything." And by offering his life on the cross, Jesus has lifted the curse. The curse of sin and death, the plague that has plagued our world since the fall of man, the plague that is responsible for the coronavirus, for the flu, for the common cold, and the pains and the heartaches and the grief and the death and all of those things that we have to endure. The plague is bigger than our current situation. The plague that is responsible for all sin and all death and all brokenness, our king came. Our perfect and innocent king, not the one who was responsible for the plague, but the one who was perfect, came and said, "Not only will I offer a sacrifice that doesn't cost me anything, I want to offer a sacrifice and will offer a sacrifice that costs me everything." Our king offered himself to lift the curse, to give his sheep life. If we're thinking about it, We might ask, if Jesus came and offered himself, and by dying and shedding his blood and becoming an atoning sacrifice for us and being raised from the dead, that is confirmation that the curse has been lifted and now there is life where there used to be death. If that's true, why hasn't the curse really been lifted? Why do we still have plagues and pestilence and suffering and death? Why do we still have grief? Well, I think first of all, those of us who trust in his strength and those of us who trust in his sacrifice, for us the curse has been lifted. Our fear of death has been taken away. We have to accept those things by faith, but we believe that death has no hold on us. We believe that even though we die, yet shall we live. We believe we don't have to fear the one who can kill the body. We believe we have nothing to fear. We believe that we can live in victory. We believe that no matter what happens in our country, in our world, we win because we believe our king offering himself to release and remove and lift and avert the curse gives us victory. But for those of us who still rely on our own strength, the curse remains. For those that still number their own strength, for those that still idolize the things of this world, the curse remains, and they remain under the fear of death. And so the Lord delays his return in order for those that remain under the curse, that they might accept his offering that he's made on their behalf. If you trust in his sacrifice, if you believe that his death has lifted the curse, if you believe that for us, for those that who've been baptized into Jesus, followers of Jesus, the curse has been lifted and we no longer have to fear, and we know that we are victorious. If you trust in his sacrifice, I want to close. Three things that I want to encourage you with this morning. And number one, don't trust in your own strength. That's what's got us in this situation in the first place. And I don't say situation and mean our current situation. I say all of the brokenness. I mean all of the grief, all of the sorrow, all the way back to the eviction from the garden. It was that thinking, I don't have to do things God's way. I want the knowledge of good and evil. I want to call the shots. I want to be the one who says what I think is right and what I think is wrong. I should do this and I shouldn't do that. I want to be my own boss. I want to be just like God. That relying on our own strength is what got us in this situation in the first place. And we continue to make a mess out of our lives by trusting in our own strength and fighting our own battles. And so if we truly believe that our King has offered himself to lift the curse and give life, then don't trust in your own strength. It's not your money or your knowledge or your wisdom that will get you out of any problem. It's the Lord and his strength. And that's why, number two, don't fear. We don't have to be afraid, and no, contrary to some Facebook posts you've read, washing your hands, wearing a mask, staying inside right now, those are wise things to do in this world that we live in right now. We don't have to be afraid. We don't have to live in fear of what's coming, because truly we believe that no matter what happens, we win. No matter what happens, we cannot lose, because our King has come and offered the sacrifice that has lifted the curse. So this virus or any sickness or a broken economy or whatever comes has no real power, has no real strength. Our God has the strength. Our God has the power. Our King died to lift the curse, and so we don't have to be afraid. And then finally, love. Love those that are still under the curse. Not everyone has the joy we have. Not everyone has the hope we have. So many people in this world, death is permanent. They don't have the hope. They don't have the joy of resurrection. For them, the curse has not been lifted. So do what you can to ease their pain, to comfort them, to encourage them, to show them compassion, to extend their life as we help to extend each other's life. Have mercy on them. But most of all, share with them. Share with them about Jesus. Don't point your finger at them and then try to tell them about Jesus, but tell them what Jesus has done for you and your life. Tell them about the King that has came to lift the curse and the better world that is prepared for us, because our King did offer himself as a sacrifice. Share with them what our King has done for us. But let's remember, as we leave here this morning, let's remember that our King has offered to lift the curse and give us life. And if we trust in his sacrifice, we don't trust in our own strength. We don't fear, and we love our neighbor. We have compassion on those who are still under the curse. This morning, if you are not a child of God, if you've not been baptized into Christ, as always, we implore you to make that decision. If you are a child of God and have found your road broken or found yourself off track and you need the prayers of this congregation, now would be an opportune time, or seek somebody out after services. We want to help you. We want to pray with you. Please come this morning as together we stand and we sing.